this morning is Corwin versus City of Kent.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. Stephanie Mesplay here on behalf of the appellant Gregory Corwin. I would like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal.
5 minutes, all right. You may proceed.
We ask that this Court reverse the decision of the trial court and remand for further proceedings in this matter. The only issue on direct appeal is whether Mr. Corwin put forth sufficient evidence to show an issue of material fact with respect to his premises liability claim. On summary judgment, a plaintiff does not need to prove his claims to the court. He needed to only present an issue of material fact. Mr. Corwin did, in fact, do so here. And to establish a premise liability claim where the plaintiff is an invitee, which in this case there's no dispute that Mr. Corwin was an invitee, there are three elements the plaintiff must show. First, that the landowner knows or should know of the existence of a condition which causes an unreasonable risk of harm. Second,
how does this evidence establish that there was a hazard that the City of Kent should have known or knew about or reasonably should have known about? Even when I think it was your client who went back to try to find this hazard, was unable to find it as far as I can tell. So why is the city somehow supposedly should have known or reasonably should have discovered it when it's not even discoverable now, apparently?
First off, on the city should have known, because the city as a landowner has a duty to inspect its land.
But, well, I guess my point is, if had they inspected, they wouldn't have found anything.
We don't know that because they didn't inspect anything. There was, when he went back to the scene, and we presented video to this court and to the court below, that there were, in fact, rock piles with large cement, concrete, whatever they were, rocks underneath the water here. And the water level in any body of water is going to rise and fall. So the precise location of it is not what is at issue here. What's at issue is that there were rock piles under the water in the swimming area of this lake. And the video that was taken many months later does show that.
Is the suggestion that any rock underwater is a hazard that should be addressed by a landowner?
No, we're not suggesting that. The rocks that were at issue here are not small rocks, small pebbles, rocks you would expect to find on the bottom of a lake. They are massive, foot-long blocks of cement.
So is there some evidence or some testimony that a foot-long or two-foot-long rock is unusual to find under the surface and therefore is some sort of hazard that should be
removed? We do, Your Honor. There was expert testimony presented that these rocks were not naturally occurring rocks that you would expect to find at the bottom of a lake, that they appeared to have been deliberately placed there. And that was the expert testimony of our expert that was presented to the court on summary judgment. And
did he also testify that they were hazardous?
I can't answer that question off the top of my head. I apologize for that, Your Honor. Evidence was also presented to the trial court that there were a number of construction projects that were undertaken in the area that Mr. Corwin was injured.
When you say the area, you mean around the ramp or where he was walking? That wasn't clear to me from reading the brief.
It was where he was walking. The boat, not the boat ramp where he entered the water. However, there was at one point in time back in the 90s a boat ramp located where he was walking currently. There's no boat ramp there now, but there was at one point in time. And that was evident at Clerk's Papers CP-146, which showed an overlay of old construction plans at this site, overlaid with the current photograph, aerial photograph of the area, showing that there was, in fact, a boat ramp there where he was injured.
But that was prior to the city's ownership of the lake, wasn't it?
It was prior to the city's ownership, yes. But the city was certainly aware of it. The records of the construction project were obtained from the city themselves.
Don't the records suggest there's notations on those records that suggest that those materials were salvaged and removed by the contractor?
If I may,
I think it says you can look that up and come back.
Sure, I will do that. Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, I'm Jeff Grendelin for the City of Kent. I'd like to start off by emphasizing that neither party in this case, despite diligent efforts, have been able to locate any case from any jurisdiction anywhere in the United States that has imposed liability on a landowner to inspect for rocks and potholes in lakes or streams or rivers to protect somebody who wades in a natural body of water like that from twisting an ankle.
Even if the entity that owns the property intentionally put the rocks in place?
There are no cases, Your Honor, that we could locate addressing this mechanism of injury or a duty to inspect. I agree with you, Judge Spearman, that might be a fact that the court would want to consider if that was a fact in this case. There's no evidence in this case. The plaintiff came forward with no evidence that the city
There were pictures that showed fairly large, appearing to be concrete rocks, and those were probably not naturally occurring, so they must have gotten there somehow, right?
But as Your Honor noted earlier this morning, the only evidence of any construction activity in the water in this area was from decades ago when King County owned the park, and King County did the work. There's no evidence whatsoever that the City of Kent was involved or that knew.
But that the city had the records of the work that was done, though.
Work records were on file with the city.
So could have known.
Well, I think that's that would impose an incredible burden on any city where any construction drawings submitted and filed with the planning department or filed with the city somehow imposes knowledge on the city of conditions anywhere within its geographical boundaries. Counsel for Mr. Corwin said there's just one we issue on appeal, and that's whether the plaintiff had met his burden of coming forward with evidence to support a premises liability claim. In fact, the City of Kent moved on three issues, and the court can affirm summary judgment on any one of those three bases. The first one is the premises liability claim, which has already been discussed. The second reason is that the city is immune under the Recreational Use Immunity Act. This court's case law is clear from Plano and Hively, Division II of this court, that a landowner need not devote its entire parcel of land to free recreational use in order to preserve recreational immunity.
So if I understood the city's argument is that Mr. Corwin could have put his boat in somewhere else, but the evidence here is that he actually paid to use the boat ramp and put the boat in with the ramp. So how does that affect the analysis? or maybe I'm not understanding.
Yes, I'm sorry. I did not make that clear enough in my briefing, Your Honor. The argument is not that he could have put his boat in somewhere else. There's no dispute. He put his kind of boat, a motor boat, in using the boat ramp, and that was appropriate. The issue is the accident did not occur at the boat ramp, which is the area he paid a fee to use. The accident occurred some distance away. That's at Clerk's Papers 140, and I brought color copies. May I hand up demonstrative exhibits?
Why don't paper you hand copies? This for the bailiff, and then he'll distribute. And I assume opposing counsel has copies of them.
Yes, Your Honor. And so. So this is a color photo of that's in the record as at page 140 of the clerk's papers. There's also a black and white version pasted into the appellant's brief. If you turn to the second page, it's the same document but with a color adjusted so that you can more clearly see the lines that were drawn by Mr. Corwin during his deposition. He's drawn a small red box on shore where he was picnicking, and a larger box out in the water where he was headed. So he was waiting between those two boxes. On the left edge of the exhibit, you see a white dock halfway down the page on the left edge leading out into the water. That is a floating dock that is adjacent to and part of the boat ramp. So when you launch your boat using the city's boat ramp there, you board using the dock. And in fact, there's evidence in the record that that's exactly how Mr. Corwin and his party got into the boat that morning. So that is the fee-generating area of the park. And the issue is whether this area where the accident occurred, this halfway between that boat ramp and the designated swim area, which is the other white floating dock on the right side of the page, whether that unimproved area is somehow loses its immunity because of the fee charged at the boat ramp. And it doesn't because of the test laid out by this court in Plano, the necessary and integral test. You don't need to wade through this area to use the boat ramp. This area was not developed or put in for access to boats.
It seems the testimony was unclear from below about the nature of this boat ramp and whether it was available for use. There seemed to be some dispute about that. Am I reading did I read the record wrong on that?
No, you didn't, Your Honor. You highlighted an area of confusion during the testimony, but I think the record is clear that dock is available and, in fact, was used, and I can provide the court with a citation to that. The confusion was whether he had used or could use this dock that surrounds the swim area. And when I was examining him during his deposition, there was some confusion about which dock we were talking about. But he clarified that he and his party did use the dock at the boat ramp to originally board the dock.
And that's the dock on the left side of the page?
Yes, Your Honor. So the city of Kent, contends that it has immunity under the Recreational Use Immunity Act, and that the exception to the act does not apply. I can address the elements of that if the court has any questions. But then the third basis for affirming summary judgment is that Mr. Corwin assumed the risk of a sprained ankle when he chose to wade through turbid water. He could not see the bottom. He'd already realized that it was rocky and that there were potholes before he headed out back to his boat. And not only that, he actually testified that he felt a large rock under his foot and proceeded to take several steps up it from starting at chest deep in the water. He climbed out until he was only knee deep in the water. Obviously, the rock doesn't rise out of the water in front of him. It's going to end at some point. At that point, he knew everything he needed to know there was a risk of twisting an ankle when he stepped off the end of it. So he assumed the risk of his injury. And then I'd like to just close by reemphasizing what the court observed first thing this morning, is that they're just this whatever this object in this hole was has never been located. There's no evidence of what it is, much less that the city of Kent had any knowledge of it or should have known it was hazardous before the accident.
To answer Judge Spearman's question regarding the record, there is indication on the construction plans that some items had been removed, and they did call for removal of additional items, but there's nothing that indicates that everything was in fact removed, because those would be post-construction records, which we don't have.
Maybe the fact that nothing was found except for a few concrete blocks, does that suggest that maybe it was removed?
Well, that's an issue of fact for the jury to decide. We presented evidence, we presented this video that there were rocks that were found in this general area, and whether they were there, whether the city knew that this was a problem, is an issue of fact for the jury to decide, not one that is appropriate for summary judgment.
So on the Recreational Use Immunity Act, I think your argument is that the necessary and integral test is not an applicable test.
I think that this court didn't announce a necessary and integral test. What the court said in Plano is you're going to examine whether the fee was charged for whether the injury occurred in the area that the fee was for. Necessary and integral was an observation about how the dock and the pier leading up to the dock were related to each other, but I don't see anything in that case that announced any kind of test. I would note that when the court is discussing it, it brings up this case from Florida involving Ocala National Forest, which I'd note is a huge park. There you had some acreage of the park that had a fee, some acreage of the park that was undeveloped and didn't have a fee. The court, both in this Florida case and in Plano, and even in Hively, isn't looking at particular parts of the park. Oh, are we looking at the boat dock or 50 feet out from the boat dock? It's looking at the general area.
So is your position then that he paid to use the boat ramp? That's how he got his boat in the water, and anything that happens after that in terms of injury to him is accepted from the recreational use of immunity?
Anything that happens to him in the lake that is within the area of the city's control, yes.
Regardless of whether it had anything to do with getting his boat into the water.
Regardless of that, yes, because the statute clearly, and this court has already said that the statute is unambiguous, says a fee of any kind.
So what if he had sprained his ankle while he was, let's say he got out, got to shore safely, was sitting there having a nice pickup, got up to have a game of Frisbee and sprained his ankle there. Would the immunity statute apply at that point?
I think that's a tougher question. Because then you're examining whether the lake and the grassy area are same part of the same general area. I don't know that that's a – I think that would be a fact question that would need to be resolved by a trier of fact as opposed to on summary judgment. But it's possible. It's also possible it's not. Here, though, what you're looking at is Mr. Corwin used the dock – to get his boat into the lake. He was then injured in the lake. It's the same general area, which is what Plano says that you're supposed to be looking at under the statute.
So how do we define general area? I mean, is there a boundary, 100 feet, 500 feet, a mile? What would qualify as the same general area?
I think that's an issue of fact. For the fact finder. We would ask that the court reverse the trial court's decision on summary judgment and remand for further proceedings. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, that concludes our oral argument calendar this morning. We'll be in recess.